Good afternoon. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPM LP 106.5 FM. On this show, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community, with reports from our team of community journalists, and live in-studio interviews. I'm Nikki Schaefer. In this episode, we'll hear about efforts to preserve the slavery memorial at the President's House in Philadelphia from erasure by the Trump administration. And we'll also learn about a group that's pushing Philadelphia officials to increase affordable housing opportunities while also addressing the city's many vacant lots and properties. But first, SEPTA has announced it's moving forward with plans to cut service by 20% starting August 24th and raise fares by 21.5% beginning September 1st. The move is the agency's response to a $213 million budget deficit. While SEPTA has been holding out hope that lawmakers in Harrisburg would provide adequate funding, the Republican-led Senate and Democrat-led House have yet to reach an agreement, and SEPTA says it could not put off service cuts and fare hikes any longer. If a budget deal that provides funding for SEPTA is reached in the coming weeks, SEPTA officials say that they could reverse these changes, but it will take at least 10 days to change course. And if more money isn't found, then SEPTA plans to implement even steeper cuts in January, eventually eliminating 50 bus routes, 5 regional rail lines, and 2 trolley lines while reducing service on many others. This is a story that we will be continuing to follow in the coming weeks. But also going on in Philadelphia right now is an affordable housing crisis. This year, Philadelphia Mayor Sherelle Parker announced the HOME Initiative, which stands for Home Ownership Made Easy. And that's led to more conversations about housing affordability and availability in the city. A central feature of the initiative is a promise to add 13,500 new affordable housing units in Philadelphia's housing stock. But activists with a chapter of 1PA called West and Southwest Rising are demanding that City Hall prioritize the rehabilitation of the city's many abandoned homes and vacant lots as part of the proposed solution to Philly's housing crisis. 1PA recently held a press conference in West Philadelphia with 3rd District City Council member Jamie Gauthier. Around the Block reporter Jen Robnett attended and brings us this story.
Go somewhere, yes. Better wake up and pay attention. Philadelphia, be somebody. If we're gonna go somewhere, we better wake up and pay attention.
This was Diana Coleman's wake-up call for Philadelphians, sang during 1PA and Councilmember Jamie Gauthier's joint press conference held last month at 6040 Spruce Street. United by a belief that housing is a human right, they gathered to demand that Mayor Parker make good on her promise to clean, green, and repair the city's neighborhoods, starting with the 402 vacant properties and 31 imminently dangerous buildings that currently blight their community.
I am so happy to be here with my friends and comrades, 1PA West Southwest Rising! Growing up in this corner of the city, abandoned properties were a fact of life, but that should not be normal. And the fact is that while abandoned properties tend to be considered a quality of life issue, they create dangerous public safety and health consequences. As a council member, I've made it a priority to finally give this chronic issue the attention it deserves from our city. Why did I take on this work? Because we know that cleaning, greening, and sealing reduces violent crime in the immediate area. It also disrupts the cycle of violence by improving the mental and physical health of neighbors. And it sends a message to the community that their local government will protect their right to live on a clean and safe lot. And as City Council's housing chair, I cannot help but think about the potential abandoned properties have to become a part of the affordable housing solution.
According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, affordable housing is housing where the household spends no more than 30% of their gross income on rent or mortgage payments, as well as utilities and routine home repairs. Any renter or homeowner paying more than this 30% is considered cost burdened. Of the approximately 160,000 people who live in the 3rd District, 54% of renters and 30% of homeowners are cost burdened. There are a number of proposed solutions: an end to exclusionary zoning that favors single-family homes, for starters. I asked a member of 1PA to weigh in.
Hi, my name's Annette Griffin, and for someone who's lived here since the early 60s, I know what my parents went through to purchase a house here against all the odds, like redlining and, you know, just being a black man here in Philadelphia in the 60s. But we purchased property and we're still here. I would love to see a housing cooperative here where, you know, people are pulling their resources together to meet their housing needs. That is how we did it for years, mutual aid.
Mutual aid and housing cooperatives are two ways to protect and preserve affordable housing for the 40% of 3rd District residents making less than $30,000 annually. But affordability is only one aspect of the housing crisis. Like a nesting doll, the housing crisis is multiple crises compounded. It is also a health and safety crisis caused by Band-Aid home repairs and inadequate housing code enforcement. Philadelphia has great programs that can help address these issues, such as the Basic Systems Repair Program and the Philadelphia Energy Authority's Built to Last program, which grants money for energy efficiency improvements. But as Councilmember Gaudier continued to emphasize in her speech, they all need additional funding. And finally, and perhaps most significantly, the housing crisis is a displacement crisis. Data collected by the Philadelphia Coalition for Affordable Communities indicates that rising costs in Northwest and South Philadelphia have pushed 32% of non-white residents from their neighborhoods.
My name is Diana Coleman, and I am a Southwest Philadelphia resident, block captain, community activist, and one of West Southwest Rising co-chairs. I'm here today not just as an activist, but as your neighbor. A neighbor who sees what happens when a city fails to care for its people and the spaces they live in. In September 2024, we launched this campaign to address one of Philadelphia's most pressing and overlooked crises: vacant and abandoned properties. In the last 5 years, only one in three city-owned land dispositions supported affordable housings, and only one in 10 supported green space or community gardens. That's not enough. That's not equity. That's not justice. So today we are calling on the city, not next year, but now, to fully fund and implement a repair law for vacant properties, to prioritize communities over developers, to turn abandoned lots into opportunity, not just for profit, but for people.
Yes.
We deserve better. Our children deserve better. And we're not going to stop until we get it. Do the right thing.
As a Philadelphian, you've likely paid a visit to some of the historic sites around the city. The words and images on the plaques and signs tell our stories, offer a reflective moment, and hold our collective memory. In March, the Trump administration announced that public-facing signs and information at all national parks across the country would be reviewed. National Park Service employees were asked to identify signage that might, quote, inappropriately disparage Americans past or living, or take away from, quote, the progress of the American people. In Philadelphia, landmarks like Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell are part of Independence National Park, and so is the President's House site and Slavery Memorial on the corner of 6th and Market. The open-air exhibit honors the lives of the 9 Africans enslaved by George Washington. It's the site where the President's House once stood, and it holds complexity for what liberty looked like for slaves living in colonial Philadelphia. In the past few weeks, more than a dozen of these displays have come under scrutiny by the Trump administration, and officials could order that they be covered up or removed from the site by this fall. Joining us in the studio to talk about the importance of the Slavery Memorial for historic Philadelphia is Michael Cord. Michael dedicated years of his life lobbying for the creation of the Slavery Memorial, which opened to the public 15 years ago. He's a civil rights attorney, Philadelphia Tribune columnist, and a founding member of the Avenging the Ancestors Coalition. Michael Cord, thanks for joining us on Around the Block. I'm also joined in the studio by Around the Block reporter Jen Robnett.
Hello.
Michael, can you tell me about what it was like to lobby with other activists for the creation of the Slavery Memorial from 2002 to 2010?
I certainly can, and thank you, Nikki, one, for inviting me, and two, for that wonderful introduction. I really appreciate that. Makes me sound more important than I really am. But having said that, let's start at the beginning, and I'll try to give short answers because this thing can go on for hours, but the audience doesn't want to hear all that. So here's the first 30-second answer. Back in 2002, the federal government decided to move the Liberty Bell Center, which then was at 5th and Market, because it was too cramped, too crowded, too congested. And they found a perfect spot, a block west at 6th and Market. And we in the black community in Philly said, okay, interesting, but no big deal. But then the second thing we found out in 2002 is that the new site of the Liberty Bell 6th and Market is where America's first White House stood. Now, back in 1790, it was known as the President's House, the Executive Mansion, the Robert Morris Mansion, but it effectively served as America's first White House. Again, black community heard about it, wasn't really interested in it. But then the third thing we found out was a shock, that at that site, 6th and Market, America's first White House, is where George Washington enslaved 9 of the 316 he had at Mount Vernon. And it's interesting because when I talk about it, I say he illegally held those 9. And people say, well, this was 1790. How could this be illegal? Slavery was legal from 1619 to 1865. But there was a law here in Pennsylvania that basically said this: if you bring enslaved human beings into Pennsylvania and hold them for 6 straight months, they can petition for their freedom. Well, George Washington not only skirted that law, but broke that law. So finally, to get directly to your question, once the black community heard about this, and we felt betrayed, I was born and raised in Philly. I went to great schools. I went to Masterman. I went to Cheney. I went to law school and never heard about George Washington enslaving black people in Philadelphia. So this group of angry black folks, and, you know, we pride ourselves. I pride myself in calling myself the angriest black man in America. And that's a line taken from James Baldwin, who said to be black and conscious in America is to be in a constant state of rage. But it has to be a constructive rage, a productive rage. So we decided to come together, form this group, and from 2002, an 8-year relentless battle, and finally on December 15 of 2010 was the grand opening of the first, I repeat, the first slave memorial of its kind on federal property in the history of the United States of America. We made history, and we were ecstatic about this. At least we were for 15 years, from 2010 up until the present.
Yeah, and how does it feel to be defending it 23 years later?
That's an excellent question. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of times when you're constantly bombarded by racism in America today, you almost feel like you're going to give up. But once you realize the hell that we've been through, I mean, there was slavery, there was sharecropping, there was convict leasing, there was Jim Crow. So all we're doing is just continuing that battle. So it's not as if we wanted it or we welcomed it, but we're ready for it. And it's when I say we're ready, we were great for those 8 years in bringing about this slave memorial slash President's House. But now, with this new move by the guy in the White House and his Interior Department secretary, we've actually broadened our base. ATTAC is ATAC, Avenging the Ancestors Coalition, and we do mean coalition. But since this announcement by the guy in the White House in March, and then by his Interior Department secretary in May, about censoring anything that, quote, inappropriately disparages America, well, now our coalition has expanded. I mean, more people. There are conservative white male Republicans who are joining with us. Because if you are a real American, you want to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about America. And our coalition is not only as good as it was from 2002 to 2010, it's expanded. I call it a coalition on steroids.
So, Michael, why is this an issue you've been drawn to and spent so many years of your life focused on?
Excellent question. The answer is we call ourselves Avenging the Ancestors Coalition because we look back and saw and realize what happened for 246 years, the horrors of slavery. And a lot of times when people talk about slavery, they just talk about the loss of freedom. Well, people go to jail today and lose their freedom, but slavery was worse than that. You lost your freedom, your name, your language, your religion, your family, your humanity, your dignity, everything that made you a human being. So I am what I am today because of the ancestors and the elders who laid the foundation. I was lucky to get into Masterman, arguably the greatest school in America. It wasn't on me. I was born and raised to a single parent in North Philly, but there were people who fought and fought and fought to open up those doors so I can get into Masterman, open up those doors to save the oldest black institution of higher education in America, Cheney University, where I graduated, and then open the door for me to get a full academic scholarship to law school. So I felt like I'm not a great guy for doing all this stuff. I owe them. You know, I would actually be a traitor very quickly. I always tell the story where people praise me for the work that I've done. I talk about this story that I made up where it's me and nine other privates on the battlefield. And the sergeant comes along and says, hey, I want one of you to take that hill and this will be a suicide mission, but you'll win the battle and we'll win the war and we're going to name a city after you. Sergeant turns around and he turns back and he sees me standing forward and he praises me for being such a great hero. What he doesn't realize is this, I never stepped forward. The nine cowards stepped back. So when I look at all the stuff that needs to go on, there's so many people who could be doing something but just stepped back. I'm just standing where the ancestors left me.
The nine cowards stepped back.
Yes. Yeah,
that's, wow. So what do you think the administration, that guy in the White House, as mm-hmm. you referred to him, mm-hmm. I like that. What do you think he's trying to accomplish?
I got some other terms we can't use it on radio, but go ahead.
So what do you think he is trying to accomplish by removing or hiding these signs at sites like this?
You know, a lot of people blame him, but I actually blame America more than I blame him. That guy got almost 80 million votes. Think about that. He didn't just come into the White House in a coup and take over. He got nearly 80 million Americans to vote for him, knowing what he was about toward black people, toward women, toward gays, lesbians. So he's a reflection of what America is. So what he's doing is what a good politician should do. Throw red meat to your base. Those nearly 80 million, this is what they want. This is the America they want. And I have to tell you, I thought that I was a student of American history until the November election. I actually had some naive hope that we'd get this thing right. But this is America. It wasn't a coup. As far as I know, it was a fair Democratic election, and he got 77 million votes, so he is America. So he's doing this because he knows that this is a winning formula. And it certainly is a winning formula. So he's doing it because it's politically strategic to do this in America today.
In an effort to combat what he's doing, you held a rally earlier this month with your organization, Avenging the Ancestors Coalition. How will you continue to advocate for the preservation of the slavery memorial?
Well, and I'm glad you referred to that great press conference we had Roz McPherson and Reverend Mark Tyler Kelly and an attorney by the name of Michelle Flamer, we all got together to say, hey, something needs to be done. And all of us, we're connected with lawyers and historians and activists and scholars. And because we have this base of support with us, we felt a need to come together to reach out to all those folks. So when we held that press conference, we must have gotten about 150, 200 names and email addresses of people who wanted to join us. In addition to a TAC's already 15,000 member email base. So what we wanted to do was to solidify this group into a real coalition, because you have historians over here writing letters. You have Park Service people who are trying to do the right thing writing letters. You got grassroots activists. Everybody in a scattershot approach is trying to tell the truth about American history. We felt the need to bring all these voices together. And at that press conference, I jokingly said to the assembled folks, about 150, I said, we really need to build this coalition. And I'm looking out here now, and there's some of you politically I don't even like. And that's true. There were some of the artists I didn't like. But we decided to come together on this. We can fight tomorrow about that other stuff. But if you are a real American, you understand the importance of telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but truth. There's some great stories about America that you can tell, but there's some not so great stories, and we just want to tell everything.
How can the public become more involved?
Very, very easy. It's a couple ways. One, I would hope that they show up to our mega mass movement meeting taking place on Wednesday, September 3, Zion Baptist Church, Broad and Venango. That's Wednesday, September 3, 6 o'clock p.m., Zion Baptist Church, Broad and Venango. One of the things that we're doing, we have in our minds a political plan, we have a legal plan, and it's all strategic. But we're not so arrogant that we think we have the solution. So we're reaching out to other people. And at this meeting on September 3, we want to hear from people and have them tell us, what do you think we should do? And I got to tell you, we have a plan B, we have a plan C, we have a plan D, and we believe that when the public comes, it'll go down to Z. So we have some great strategies. Two things. One, show up at Zion Baptist Church, Broad and Venango, 6 p.m. September 3rd. And for folks who need more information, they should go to our website, which is avengingtheancestors.com. That's avengingtheancestors.com, and get all the information they need.
Awesome.
So I wanted to know if you had any plans to commemorate. A lot of people probably don't know this, but on August 25th, that is the 406th anniversary mm-hmm. of slavery in America. Mm-hmm. I did not know that until I read an article that you wrote in the Tribune.
And, you know, it's funny because there was a debate amongst scholars as to what the official date was. Everybody agreed 1619. Everybody agreed August. And we thought up until 5 or 6 years ago, it was August 20. But based on recently uncovered information, it's August 25, because that's when, and this is where it gets convoluted, but I'll give you a 30-second version. What happened is the Portuguese, who were just naval geniuses, they could just sail anywhere and everywhere on the planet. So you had these Portuguese navigators who wound up on the west coast of Africa. They encountered some people from Angola. They grabbed those people up. This is in August of 1619, put them on a quote-unquote slave ship. And as this Portuguese ship was leaving, you had two pirate ships. You had a Dutch pirate ship, you had an English pirate ship that attacked the Portuguese ship. And we know that approximately 30 who were in one pirate ship were brought to Virginia. And we know that that actually took place based on firsthand documentation, August 25, 1619. And what my group does is every year we hold an event to acknowledge that. And back on August 25 of 2019, that was 400 years. To the day, we had 400 children to carry posters from 1619 to 2019. Powerful.
See, that's an example of how you preserve history.
Yes.
Because not many people know that. That was something you discovered, what you said, 5 years ago.
Yep, absolutely.
Through documents.
Yep, and I'm so glad you asked that question. I would have kicked myself after this interview if I hadn't mentioned that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm wondering what like taking a long-term view, what could the ideal future of Philadelphia's historical sites look like, being inclusive of all American history, including the good, the bad, the ugly, and what would it take to get there?
If you had asked me this question before the November election, I would have given you an optimistic answer about how America is getting better, that there's this concept of evolving standards of decency. We were bad yesterday, we're better today, and we'll be perfect tomorrow. I don't know about that anymore. I'm no longer, and I really don't want to be a downer, but I'm not really optimistic. I think what I decided to do is, instead of focusing on America at large, I figured that we just talk to like-minded people, because there's a lot of them. I think there are more good people in America than bad people. But the bad people seem to have the power. So my strategy, and again, it might be naive, is to get those good people, get them politically active, and take over politics. And start at the beginning. Start locally, then statewide, then regionally, then nationally. But short answer, I'm no longer optimistic, but I haven't given up. So we need to continue to fight for these memorials and monuments like we're doing on September 3rd at Zion Baptist Church.
Do you see parallels between what's happening today and what has happened in the past, specifically when it comes to controlling the narrative of the nation's history?
You know, I always say a question is good if I would have asked it. So I would have asked that very same question. And here's the answer. It's a direct parallel. It's always pushback in America. There was slavery, and then you had a situation where, okay, the North won the Civil War, and it was a time to rebuild the nation. And you got people coming together to create a new America. And it looked good for a while. And then there was pushback to that. And then we got more aggressive racism. So it seems like every time there's one step forward in America, there's two steps back. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep moving forward. One of the things that we really need to do is all the oppressed groups who have in the past been selfish in regard to their own agenda, transgender and gay and black and whatever, disabled, fighting their separate battles in a scattershot way. We all need to come together, and there's going to be stuff we don't agree upon, but that's okay. Just find the 5 or 10 things that we all agree upon and build the base on that and move forward. And I think that's the solution. So as long as we can get these oppressed groups together and realize that it's all about intersectionality, everybody's battle is everybody else's battle. So if we can do that, we can beat the bad guys.
Thank you so much to Michael Cord for taking the time to speak with us today. And thanks to Sheila Lorette Emerson, who is our board operator for this episode.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager, and Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm Jennifer Robnett.
And I'm Nikki Schaefer. Around the Block will be back next month with another episode featuring more stories and conversation from our team of Philadelphia area community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.